it's Diane. On my mind, the future of the National Rifle Association. On Thursday, New York Attorney General Letitia James filed a lawsuit accusing the NRA of widespread fraud. She called for the organization to be dissolved. The suit alleges the NRA's leadership used the nonprofit's money to fund luxurious lifestyles and lavish vacations. UCLA law professor Adam Winkler is an expert on gun policy. He's been following the NRA for years. Those have accused the attorney general of playing politics, an attempt to take down one of the GOP's biggest donors. Winkler says it was the NRA's own infighting that led to the investigation. I spoke with him Friday morning. Adam, tell me about yesterday's announcement by the New York Attorney General. Just what is she accusing the NRA of doing?
Well, basically, she's accusing the NRA of engaging in widespread financial mismanagement that amounted to essentially fraud on the organization, that key leaders, including Wayne LaPierre, were essentially converting the NRA's funds that were contributed to the organization, which is a nonprofit organization, but converting those funds to personal use, taking luxurious vacations, signing sweetheart deals. Wayne LaPierre, for instance, had a secret agreement that he would get $17 million after he was fired or after he left the NRA, a kind of escape package, a golden parachute, if you will, of the type that we'd expect to see in a Fortune 500 profit-making company, not the kind of thing you expect from a nonprofit.
So how strong are the merits of the case?
Well, of course, the merits have yet to be determined, and we'll need a trial on the facts to really know exactly what happened. But if the allegations that the attorney general included in her complaint are true, and there's good reason to suspect they are, this is a very serious problem for the NRA, that there are numerous instances of insider transactions, business deals with directors, like I say, sweetheart deals for Wayne LaPierre, including an escape clause, but also lavish business expense, lavish trips and luxury trips and lavish expense accounts, and stuff that didn't follow the strict procedures of New York nonprofit law. If you have a nonprofit, you can sometimes have, say, a consulting deal with someone who is on the board of directors, but that has to go through a certain process under New York law, where the board of directors have to vet it and have to vote on it and have to have all the information available to it. And it seems that over the last few years, the NRA has been playing pretty fast and loose with some of these procedural requirements, apparently thinking that they were not subject to the same kind of scrutiny that other nonprofits worry about all the time.
The attorney general is calling for dissolution of the NRA. Does that seem extreme to you, or is that the only way she felt she could get to what she wanted?
Well, of course, dissolution of the NRA would be an incredibly dramatic move, and one that would have far-reaching consequences for American politics and American law. At the same time, the attorney general sought lesser measures too. Under the law, the attorney general can seek to rescind some of these insider transactions and force people to pay back the money to the organization. She's also sought to remove certain members of the board of directors and officers like Wayne LaPierre who've engaged in these kinds of deals. And it's very possible that although she has sought dissolution, she might still win this case and achieve something less than dissolution, maybe removal of some of these people. In terms of why the attorney general sought dissolution as a very dramatic and extreme remedy, Of course, I can't speak for the Attorney General, but it does seem to me that her reasoning was that under New York law, if there is a persistent pattern of abuse, then the organization should be put out of business, because you can't just remove one or two directors and trust the organization to do the right thing, because the directors and staff have all been turning a blind eye to misconduct in the past. A good recent example of the New York Attorney General taking a dissolution action against a nonprofit actually comes just a couple years ago with the Trump Charitable Foundation. Donald Trump had his own charitable foundation that he was basically using for his own personal expenses and his campaign expenses. And after finding persistent pattern of abuse, the Attorney General was able to negotiate a deal with the Trump Foundation that it would go out of business, that it would be dissolved and its assets distributed. And she's now seeking to do the same thing with the NRA.
So how hard is that going to be to prove a persistent pattern of abuse?
I think it's definitely going to be the Attorney General's biggest challenge to show that the organization, which is obviously a huge organization that is very, very important, that has a lot of tentacles into American life in various ways, from training programs for police officers to political lobbyists and organizations in every state. It's going, I think, just by based on the size of the organization, it's going to be a little harder for the New York Attorney General to show that this persistent pattern is one that makes us unable to trust the NRA ever again. In contrast to, say, the Trump Charitable Foundation, which was a small organization associated with a high-profile person, but was only a couple people working for the Trump Charitable Foundation. The NRA, is, of course, has hundreds of staffers and has affiliates all over the country. It's going to be a much bigger challenge for her to dissolve the NRA.
But they've been in trouble financially. Hasn't Wayne LaPierre had to lay off a good many of its employees around the country?
That's right. This action couldn't come at a worse time for the NRA, because even before this happened, the NRA was really suffering financially. Although still so powerful in American politics, the NRA has been just really not keeping its financial house in order. It's been spending way more money than it's been taking in. And as a result, it's been running deficits for year after year after year. And even before COVID hit, in January of this year, Wayne LaPierre told a meeting of the board of directors that he had had to lay off dozens, scores of people, that recent troubles with the NRA, including a big lawsuit with its longtime ad agency, had cost the organization. He said upwards of between an $80 and $100 million hit to the organization, and that they've had to lay off tons of people. I think COVID, of course, has only made that worse. And my understanding is they've basically laid off about a third of their staff. So they were bleeding money. They were bleeding, hemorrhaging money anyway. And so this really does come at a bad time, because now they've really got to spend a lot of money defending against this dissolution action, money that honestly the NRA just doesn't have right now.
And what about the infighting going on within the organization? I recall what seemed to be a battle for power between Wayne LaPierre and Oliver North.
That's right. That battle came out in public in March of last year at the NRA's annual convention. And I think the reason why we're seeing the Attorney General of New York step in at this point and seek to dissolve the NRA is as a result of the information that's come out as a result of this internal squabble between the NRA and its ad agency, a company called Ackerman McQueen. It's not just the NRA's ad agency. That sort of diminishes the role that Ackerman McQueen has played in the life of the NRA. This has been the NRA's partner for over 30 years, was responsible for all of the messaging that we associate with the NRA, from Charlton Heston raising his fist above his head with a rifle in it saying, "From my cold dead hands," to NRA TV, which was completely the brainchild and run by Ackerman McQueen. A divorce with your ad agency might seem like a small thing, but with the NRA, it's like a divorce of of a couple that had been married for 50 years, and it was incredibly difficult to pull them apart and to separate them in a neat way. And indeed, that lawsuit has become so nasty that Ackerman McQueen has already agreed to cooperate with the New York Attorney General in trying to put the NRA out of business. So that acrimonious internal squabble clearly is what is behind the New York Attorney General's action.
Now, at the same time, New York Attorney General James has filed her case, there's another one filed in Washington, D.C. by the Attorney General. Tell me about that one. How is it similar to or different from New York?
So it is similar, but slightly different. So when we talk about the NRA, like many nonprofits, there's actually a couple different organizations that are incorporated in different places and different ways. So the main NRA organization, the nonprofit that the Attorney General has filed an action against, is a 501c4, a social welfare organization that can engage in some political activity, as long as it's engaged in generally educational purposes. But it also has, like many nonprofits, a 501c3, a charitable arm called the NRA Foundation. And that organization can't engage in any political activity, but can engage in charitable or educational activities. And that the NRA Foundation, the charitable arm of the NRA, is actually incorporated in Washington, D.C., not New York. And the D.C. Attorney General is basically raising very similar allegations against the NRA Foundation that the New York Attorney General has raised against the NRA's 501c4 organization that's incorporated in New York. So it's a little complicated in terms of corporate organization. The basic idea is the same, that there's mismanagement at the top, financial, self-dealing, insider deals that were sweetheart deals that were not fair and reasonable to the organization, that didn't follow the proper procedures. So they're very similar actions, and I'm sure that the two attorney general's office have been coordinating and sharing information on this case. But they go after two different elements of the NRA, the C3 and the C4.
So what would happen if, as some have suggested, the NRA moved out of New York and went instead to Texas?
Well, of course, it's not that easy to do. Wouldn't it be nice if you'd like every time like the local police decided to come into your house, I'm just going to move to another state. You can't get me. It just doesn't work that way. New York has jurisdiction over the NRA and the NRA's assets. If it tries to move the assets to another state, they're still within the control of the NRA and New York will still be able to get access to them. It is true that if the NRA is dissolved, the NRA or a similar organization could, say, the National Revolver Association rather than the National Rifle Association, could incorporate and do exactly the same kinds of things that the NRA was doing in Texas or somewhere else. However, if the NRA is dissolved, then all of its assets will be distributed by the New York Attorney General. So it can't, the NRA, the people behind the NRA could form a new organization doing the exact same kind of thing, but they don't get to take all the assets that have been built up over 150 years of the NRA's life and bring them with them to that new organization. That would not be allowed. So for better or worse, they're stuck in New York for the time being.
So to whom would those assets be distributed?
Well, that's the interesting thing. In some strange way, dissolving the NRA could be a boon for other gun rights organizations. Under the terms of New York law, if the assets of a nonprofit are distributed because of dissolution, those assets will be distributed to other organizations or entities that are serving the donor's interests. The idea is this organization can't be trusted to serve the donor's interests, so we're going to give the money and assets to other organizations that will serve the donor's interests and will serve the donor's intent, which means that those assets and resources would still go to advancing the cause of gun rights and marksmanship training.
You know, you might be wondering how those revelations about the NRA spending, I mean, $2.1 million a year salary for Wayne LaPierre, for just starters, How do you suppose they might, those revelations might be affecting those voters who are part of the NRA?
Well, I think this action by the New York Attorney General might have two paradoxical effects on voting behavior. On the one hand, it certainly reveals more allegations of mismanagement and misuse of members' funds by the NRA, which could sour some donors who give to the NRA and say, hey, wait, my money's being used for bad purposes. I'm not going to give money to the NRA. At the same time, I think these allegations really do help in the law, at least in the short run, Donald Trump and the GOP, because in this coming election, they were always going to say that Joe Biden and the Democrats want to take away your Second Amendment rights. But now they have really some meat behind that claim, because they can say, look, they're trying to put the NRA out of business. They're trying to take away your rights. And I think that this action by the Attorney General of New York will actually probably inspire more of the single issue pro-gun voters to turn out this November and vote for the GOP. So I think in some ways, in a summer of very, very bad news for the president and for the GOP, this is actually sort of a real gift to them in terms of how it might mobilize voters on election day. They might not trust the NRA, but they're going to want to protect the right to bear arms.
So do you think it was a mistake on the part of the New York Attorney General to bring this lawsuit now?
I wouldn't say mistake. I think that the appropriate behavior of the Attorney General is, if there is a case to be made and you think that the case is a strong one and worth prosecuting, you should prosecute it, and you prosecute it without regard to the effect on the elections. It would be seemingly wrong if they were to try to, I don't know, manipulate the timing or aspects of this lawsuit in a way that was designed to, I don't know, help Democrats or help Joe Biden. That would seem fundamentally incorrect and fundamentally wrong to do it that way. So I think this might have an effect on the election. It might be one that helps Republicans rather than Democrats. But whether it was a mistake or not, I think probably not, because it was the right timing. She had been investigating this for about a year. The allegations are pretty clear. The information's pretty clear. She thought she had an action. It was time to take it.
And the president has accused the, quote, radical left New York of trying to destroy the NRA. How political do you think her decision was?
Well, there is no doubt that Letitia James, the Attorney General of the state of New York, has been going after the NRA and wants to go after the NRA. She called the NRA a terrorist organization. She promised to investigate the NRA in her campaign term. And I think those comments do shed some light on the motivations behind the investigation. However, I don't think a political motivation that didn't have the facts behind it, that didn't actually find wrongdoing or abuse within the NRA, would have gone this far. I think the real issue is, you have a political motivation behind the prosecutor, yes, but you have real revelations of mismanagement and abuse that have come out as a result of this internal squabble with Ackerman McQueen that the New York Attorney General just couldn't ignore. And whether she was political in her initial motivation or not, if the evidence is there, she should prosecute. And no reason why the NRA should be above the law simply because she doesn't like them.
Where do you see Oliver North in this whole argument?
Well, Oliver North has been a key player. When the internal squabble sort of really first broke out between Ackerman McQueen and the NRA, Oliver North was the president of the organization. And although he didn't make any money from the NRA, he was making from Ackerman McQueen more than $1 million a year as a host for their various NRA TV programs. North was the one who went to LaPierre before the annual membership meeting in 2019. And he told LaPierre it was time to resign, and that if he didn't resign, North threatened to reveal a whole bunch of information about the improprieties and improper financial mismanagement that Wayne LaPierre had engaged in. LaPierre fought off that effort, was able to oust Oliver North instead of being ousted himself. But Oliver North did follow through on his threat, and the information has come out about the NRA's lavish spending and inappropriate management of financial resources. And indeed, it was the battle with Oliver North that led directly, I think, to the Attorney General's actions yesterday, and really highlight that Oliver North has played a really important role, and ironically, in bringing about the downfall of the NRA.
Are you suggesting it was Oliver North who went directly to the Attorney General in New York?
Sorry, I don't mean that. I mean that Oliver North made these allegations against Wayne LaPierre. Wayne LaPierre said, no, I'm not going to resign. And so these allegations of mismanagement and abuse and lavish spending by Wayne LaPierre came out just as Oliver North had threatened. And it's because those allegations came out that the New York Attorney General was able to say, hey, wait a second, what's going on here with this organization, and launch an investigation. This was not an investigation that was launched because the Attorney General had it in for the NRA, even though she probably had it in for the NRA. This was an investigation that was launched because there was evidence in the newspaper coming out from these reports from Oliver North and the Ackerman-McQueen allies who were being forced out of the NRA, that there was wrongdoing going on, and that provided the fodder for her investigation. So I don't think Oliver North has been in communication directly with the Attorney General, but I honestly do not know whether that's happened or not. But I do know that Ackerman-McQueen has agreed to cooperate with the Attorney General, and I suspect that Oliver North might be called to support that effort too.
More of my conversation with UCLA Law Professor Adam Winkler when we come back.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here is the rest of my conversation with Adam Winkler. He's professor of law at UCLA, specializing in constitutional law, the Supreme Court, and gun policy. Talk about the NRA Political Victory Fund, the group's political action committee. How does this lawsuit affect that group?
So directly, there's no effect on the political lobbying arm of the NRA. Remember earlier, we said that any nonprofit has a number of different entities.
Sure.
A charitable foundation, it has a social welfare organization, a C4, but the NRA also has a political lobbying arm that is not either a C3 or a C4, and that's that political lobbying arm that you mentioned, and that raises money from people specifically for the purpose of spending money on the election. And that organization, again, it's a slightly different entity within the NRA, is not directly affected by these allegations. And they have been raising money, and they do have money to spend on this coming election. Although notably, they've spent almost nothing so far. I think it does have an indirect effect on the NRA's spending in the 2016 election. Number one, the NRA is in disarray, and its leadership has to focus on saving the NRA rather than fighting gun control and fighting for some little house race in the middle of nowhere. The NRA's intellectual energy is going to be focused on saving the NRA more than this election. And again, talk about bad timing. I mean, this is an election where the NRA's voice could be really important for saving the cause of gun rights from more gun control laws. Joe Biden could win the presidency. We could see a blue wave election that sweeps into both houses of Congress, majorities that are looking to pass new gun control laws. And so this timing is really bad for the NRA.
At the same time, you point out in the New Republic that this all began at the height of the NRA's power, poised to enact a sweeping agenda.
Well, that's right. One of the most remarkable aspects of the story is the timing. just 3 years ago, in January of 2017, when Donald Trump stood on that stage and took the oath of office, was inaugurated as president, it seemed that the NRA was at the very height of its power. It had Republican pro-gun majorities in both houses of Congress. The NRA had been an early backer of Trump, who's made the Second Amendment so the centerpieces of his agenda and his political appeal. And they had an agenda. They were going to get some new federal laws passed that were going to liberalize the gun laws in America. And now, 3 years later, none of those laws that the NRA was seeking to get adopted have been adopted or are going to be adopted.
Why?
Well, because in part, because really mass shootings, it's the perennial problem for the NRA, is right when they get a little political momentum, there's some mass shooting. What happened was one of their big agenda items, for instance, was a national concealed carry reciprocity law. And although the details of the law are complicated, it would basically mean that there was anyone could get a permit to carry a concealed weapon in any state of Union, even in states like California, where that's very hard to do, or New York, where it's very hard to do. And the House passed a bill to allow this, and it was going to go to the Senate. Its prospects weren't clear in light of a potential Democratic veto. But then there was the shooting at the Marjorie Stoneman High School in Parkland, Florida, that really doused the political momentum for that concealed carry bill. And so it never moved. And then after that, you had a change in the House, and the political momentum has really never been there since Parkland to get this ball rolling again. So part of it is just, you know, the difficulty of gun violence in America, but also part of it is apparently the last year and a half, they've really been focused on this internal squabble, and that Wayne LaPierre has survived the coup attempt that Oliver North offered a year ago. And in the meantime, LaPierre has ousted from the NRA all of the people who were associated with Ackerman. And so you've really had a leadership brain drain at the NRA over the past year and a half. That's also made it more difficult for it to achieve its political agenda.
So back to the lawsuits. What's the timeline? How long is all this going to take?
Well, this could take quite a while. You know, this is just the beginning. The complaint that was filed is like the initial complaint in a lawsuit. There's a lot to happen. There's discovery where they have to get each other's evidence. There's a potential trial that might happen, or a set of hearings before a New York court. This could take several years. There could be appeals, of course, that could go all the way up to the Supreme Court, depending on what the issues are. I don't expect this to be over anytime soon.
So years in the courts, you expect.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. Again, it's always hard to predict. It's always hard to know what kind of issues might be going up on appeal, how many of those issues. But look, the NRA is fighting for its life. It's going to fight hard, and it's going to pursue every legal avenue. And as a result, this is going to take some time.
So think ahead with maybe what could happen with the fall of the NRA. What impact could that have on gun policy in the U.S. in the long term?
Well, it could have a huge impact. I mean, there's no doubt that the NRA is one of the most powerful political forces in American politics. It's been that way for a while. And their ability to shape legislation, to shape primary campaigns, especially in the Republican Party, has been really, really remarkable. And if the NRA is not there, someone's either going to have to fill that gap or no one will fill that gap. I will say this, though. It's not the end of strong gun rights in America, even if the NRA is dissolved. The NRA is not the same thing as American voters. They do push a lot of American voters in a particular direction. But look, there's a lot of pro-gun, single-issue voters out there in America, and they're going to vote there to protect their guns, whether the NRA is there or not.
Finally, before we close, do you have anything else you want to say to our listeners about this whole issue?
Well, nothing in particular other than that this really shows the importance of a nonprofit following the law. And I think one of the big stories here is that the NRA had a sense of invincibility because it was so powerful, because it had connections at the highest sources, was welcomed in the White House, and in every GOP Senate office, it kind of felt like it was above the law, that it could basically play fast and loose with the rules. And these executives were apparently using the NRA as their personal piggy bank. But this really shows that that invincibility gave it a false sense of security, and that even something so small as the Charities Bureau and the New York Attorney General's office, and a division that probably no one's really ever heard of before, can actually have the potential to bring down one of the most powerful political organizations in America. It's really quite remarkable.
Adam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks again for having me on.
That was Adam Winkler. He's law professor at UCLA. His most recent book is titled We the Corporations, How American Businesses Won Their Civil Rights. And that's all for today. Thanks to those of you who've reached out to let me know what you'd like me to cover during this very difficult time. Please continue to let us know what's on your mind. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman, Allison Brody, and Sandra Baker. Our engineer is Mike Kidd. Thanks for listening, all. Don't forget to wear your mask. I'm Diane Reed.